Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for spring semester 2026. Today, Foundations of Finance. This is kind of dropping into the regular schedule of the lectures of the course, and every day making sure that you take notes. One thing I forgot to mention, for in-class quizzes, you're allowed to use written notes. Make sure that you have your notes written because you're in the lockdown browser, so you can't go and look at the notes electronically. So make sure that you got, or print out, you can print out your notes, obviously, but so I'll tell you if there's going to be a quiz. And by the way, next week there I'll have my first surprise quiz, so please be surprised by it. So, but do make sure that you have your notes either written or printed, because like I said, in lockdown, you can't get out of it. Now make sure that you take that practice quiz so that you know that Respondus is behaving for you. Sometimes it's a little glitchy. But anyway, before I begin the lecture, the podcasting site is up. Your first lecture is available to you. Now again, this is isu-prof.com. That's where the lectures originate. And you can see that they are also, if you click here, you can go over to Apple iTunes, and you can see that they have already been picked up in my album on Apple iTunes as well. So you can listen to them there if you don't want to be on my website to listen to them. Now, the way it works is you find your section. This is section one, so lecture one is up. Two ways. You can click here and play it. This is sometimes I do it two ways because some people have a hard time just using an MP3 link and other people have a hard time using the MP3 player. So I can do it both ways so you're covered. But normally you'll just probably just hit the player and it's just going to play right in your computer. And as I've said, these are professionally produced.
The Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for spring semester 2026.
Welcome to Business Finance, FIL 240.
There you go. That's what you are going to hear every night for the rest of your lives. You'll be listening to these when you're asleep, when you're on the toilet, when you're eating, when you are engaging in romance with your partner. Of course, obviously, you'll do that. But one way or the other, listen to the lectures. They are very helpful, especially earlier on when your notes are going to have gaps in them. Because, like today, you're going to be hearing a lot of information. I'll repeat things over and over again, but you're going to have holes in what you put down, what you write down. And this is one of the best ways to fill in those gaps, as we used to say, to write up your notes, as it were. So bookmark this, and play it whenever you think that you have the time. The one thing that I would recommend you don't do is wait until right before the midterm to try to listen to all the podcasts. Try to keep up with them as you go along. But they're just the lectures. I take out any bad words that I say so that you can't hold them against me. I edit them heavily sometimes. But anyway, there you go. This is for you. Now, aside from anything else that I'm probably forgetting, it's time for a look at the numbers. And as I've said before, at first, the information that I pour at you, a lot of this is actually in the textbook in different places. Some of it is not. And especially the deeper look that I give you and have you begin to see how to do those deeper looks yourselves. And I talk about stocks, bonds, commodities, foreign markets, and all of that. The first thing that you would want to be paying attention to are some of these exchanges and indexes. Remember, an exchange is an actual platform where many, many different stocks, bonds, and other securities are being traded. Now, in this the exchanges, the big ones would be the New York Stock Exchange, NYSE, and then there is this monster that is small, really scrappy stocks. Generally speaking, New York Stock Exchange stocks have one, two, or three letters, like, like F for Ford, GE, General Electric, things like that, one, two, three letters. Normally, a four-letter stock would be a NASDAQ stock, although there are some companies that started on the NASDAQ, so they would have had four letters, but they moved up to the NYSE, so they're carrying the four letters. Even that would say, oh, that's a NASDAQ stock, but it's actually an NYSE stock. So it's not a perfect translation, but if it's one, two, or three, it's definitely a New York Stock Exchange stock. The NYSE is vast. It is, and we'll talk a lot about it, but it is the biggest trading platform of all. And it's huge companies and medium-sized companies all playing together on the NYSE. The NASDAQ is a measure of small company activity, small corporate activity. But let me do something here. The ones that I generally look at are the Dow 30. Now, that's an index of 30 huge companies, vast, generally oligopolies. They don't function like normal companies. They're not really competition. The oligopolies have a different strategic way of managing their portfolios of assets and their ways of doing business. That's the top tier of the world's economy. What is going on in investor sentiments up there at the top? Then there is the S&P 500. Again, notice that this is an index, 500 huge companies. You will probably work for, or your company will be dependent upon, an S&P 500 company. They are, generally speaking, if you remember your time in economics, microeconomics, we would say that they're monopolistic competitors. Their products in the short run have a monopolistic position, but as time goes on, they drift toward more perfect competition. But they are big, and this, the S&P 500, the market cap, and I'm just using a word and I'll explain it later, the market cap of these 500 together constitutes maybe about two-thirds of the entire world's value. And I'll show you some of the information about that today and talk more about it. And then I also pay attention to the NASDAQ. Now, remember, the NASDAQ is actually an exchange. It's an electronic exchange. There's no physical platform for it. But this is small companies. So when I look at these three, I'm seeing a little bit more granular view of what the market sentiment is about the world's economy at a given point in time. And here, if I look at the Dow should usually be the least reactive. These are huge companies. They're like a giant, really thick, viscous fluid, their movements are. And I look at the Dow 30, and I see here that there's a plus 0.12%. First things first, in finance, we really, and in many scientific disciplines, absolute numbers mean nothing. What matters is percentages. So when, for example, think about it this way. You make $1 on a $10 stock. Okay, it goes up to $11. That's not the same as making $1 up on a $100 stock. You see that, right? That's why we care only about percentages. So when you see the popular financial media or blogs or whatever say, well, the Dow was up 800 points today. So what does that mean? I need to know where that 800 points was coming from. Was it coming from 1,000 up to 1,800, or was it coming from 10,000 up that much? So You have to think about percentages at all times. Now, that is a green number. So is the Dow having a bullish day or a bearish day? You tell me, bull or bear? Bull. It's up, up, green, up. And it's not bull, it's bull, okay? And as you can see, the market sentiment, look at, that's, by the way, those little charts are called spark charts. And actually, you can do spark charts in Excel. They're a very cool way to have a little picture of a set of data. And visually, it's better. But notice that the Dow 30, it spiked in the early trading. We're near the end of the trading day now. Here in Central Time Zone, the New York, the bell rings at 8:30 for us, the opening bell. That's when the trading, buy and sell all begins. And then it ends at 3 o'clock. So we're nearing the end of the day. You notice that in the early morning trading, you see how it was rising. There was a lot of positive information kicking the market up, 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 up like that. You see that there? I'll point it out to you. Right here. See this? This rising. And then it began to lose momentum. There was negative information beginning to come in that was suppressing the stock prices. More sells than buys were happening. In the morning, more buys than sells. So the on-balance activity was toward buys. And then later on, the activity began to turn the other way. Now, sometimes, and I'll talk about this later, sometimes you will see a spike in a stock or an index. It'll go up a lot, and then it'll tail off, drop. Sometimes that's just profit taking. We made some money, let's get out of this now. So it's not always such a horrible thing. Well, it's dropping. Well, that might just be we made money in the morning. Okay, we're going to sell out, right? Sell off some of that now. So that might be. Now look at the S&P 500. It has the same profile, except not quite as strong. And it's up more than the Dow. The Dow was up 0.22%. The S&P 500, as usual, not always, but as usual, it's going to have a stronger reaction, positive or negative. And in this case, it's up about 0.32%. Good news. Great. Okay, now the next one I want to look at is the NASDAQ. It's up. Actually, it's up not as much as it usually would be up a little more, but now it's not. But notice that it spiked and then it kind of tailed down a little bit. So we do have a bullish day, but it's not spectacular. Anything above plus 0.25% or below negative 0.25%, that's a pretty quiet day on the street. It's not spectacular either way. We're not impressed. Yeah, it was a mildly bullish day, but that's about all we can say. Now let's start the world walking across the world. Now, we go over here, we start in Asia. While we were all asleep in the middle of the night last night, the sun was shining in Tokyo, and the Tokyo Exchange was trading. And this is 225 significant stocks on the Nikkei index, which we call it the Nikkei 225. That's representative of what happened on the overall Tokyo Exchange. And if you can see there, it was definitely a bear day. It was, and something I've always noticed about the trading in Japan, most of the action happens right away. And then after that, the market just kind of drifts. And in this case, you had a big drop on the opening, and then it just sort of slowly dribbled down a little bit more. But it was enough. I'm going to have to make this a little smaller so I can see the percentage. Whoa, that was a heavy down day. Do you see that? Negative 0.3, more than 3% down. And I'm going to give you the sort of the contour of how you should react to the numbers. Negative 3% down, negative 3%, that's strong. That's a hurricane almost. It's not what we would call a black swan. A black swan is a really heavy negative, and it would go over a period of days probably. So this is not necessarily a black swan, but at the same time, it's enough down for us to notice something really pissed off the investors in Tokyo. Now we come up here and we have a look at the Hang Seng, which is Hong Kong. Hang Seng was up. It wasn't up spectacularly, but it was up. So in other words, this was not an Asian bear market. It was a Japanese bear market. The Chinese were mildly bullish today. And we could even look at Australia, which is in the Asian market. And it had a decent bull day. So we can sort of put together from this that, yeah, this was something was going on in the Japanese economy that got the investors there spooked, but it was not something about the entire Asian economy. So then we said, as the sun crossed the sky and began to set in Asia, it was waking up in Europe. And as we look here in Europe, again, some of the ones I look at are like the CAC 40. That's 40 big companies on the Paris Exchange. And if we look at the CAC, it rolled upward and then it just gave up and started. There was some positive information pushing the market up, up, up. And then it turned the other way and it tailed down. By the end of trading, it was actually in negative territory. Nothing horrible, but it gave up all the gains of the morning by the time the bell closed in the afternoon. So it just sort of see how it goes with the DAX, Germany, Berlin Exchange. It was actually kind of sputtering a little bit down all through the day. And it finished off nothing big. Negative 0.14% is nothing really exciting, but it was down for the day. There was a sort of a mildly bearish sentiment on the Berlin Exchange. Now, the Euronext is a composite of stocks from the different bourses. Remember, bourse is what we call an exchange in Europe. And you can see that overall, it was a very quiet, mild day, but by the end, it was losing momentum pretty hard down there. About a little afternoon over there, they dropped, the bears started coming in and selling off. And so the sell orders exceeded buy orders, and so ultimately, it settled down a little more than 0.5% for the day. So these are kind of like looking at the pictures of different places in the world. And remember, as I told you before, this isn't little money. This is trillions of dollars we're talking about. You're looking at the image of information being turned into money. And if we go up here, now this is London, FTS, where the heck is London? There it is. London, Financial Times, 100 big stocks on the London Exchange, representative of the overall exchange. And notice that it had an interesting difference. It was bearish in the morning, and then the bulls took over, and they pulled it back up above water level, and by the end of the day, it was up a little bit. So there wasn't a consistent pattern around the world. Many times you'll see the same kinds of patterns from one place in the world to another. Today wasn't like that at all, which is kind of catches me off guard because my usual spiel is see how all these look kind of similar. Not today. It wasn't going to be that way for some reason. And I can give you a couple of the reasons why, but let me take you over here for a minute. This over here, these are commodities. And by a commodity, what I showed you up here is a financial asset. These are financial assets. Everything here it doesn't have a physicality to it. Down here, these are commodity assets. They have a physical existence, and they represent something that you could put your hands on. That's the best way to describe it. And so you have platinum, silver, gold, And then you have two kinds of oil, and I'll talk about those in a minute. But then you have copper and natural gas. And there are so many other commodities. There's a commodity for anything from pork bellies to corn to wheat there are commodities that aren't even commodities anymore. But the ones that you usually have a look at, one is gold. Now, silver and gold are a little different. They're both metal. But silver is generally, its price moves based upon supply and demand dynamics. There's a supply of silver, but the demand for silver has two parts, mostly industrial or cosmetic. And so it's sort of a normal metal, like copper. There's a supply of copper, and then there is the demand for copper, and those are driven by the need for them and the availability of them. Gold has another piece to it. Gold has a speculator aspect. Not only are there industrial and cosmetic uses for gold, but there is also a speculator's heaven in there. When speculators think that the world is going to hell, they will buy gold, and the price of gold will surge upward. When they think that there's nothing big happening, they'll get rid of some of their gold, so the price of gold will go down. This is a much stronger influence in the gold price that you see and the gold price movements than it is in other metals or in gas or natural gas or something like that. So we look at gold as sort of like what we call the gold bugs, the apocalyptic freaks thinking is going to happen next. Well, today they got, look at this spike. You see that spike right there? Apparently something got the gold bugs all excited that the end of the world is coming. So you had a lot of buying of gold, gold bars, gold bullion, gold mining stocks, all that kind of stuff. Okay, now, two kinds of oil. Now, I spent some years consulting in the oil and gas industry with Wildcat Group down in Texas. I actually became part of the company. And so here's the story with gold. Crude oil, that is just your average oil. But actually oil comes out of the ground in different grades. There's the stuff that we pulled out of the awful places we were in Texas. It's thick and it's sour. It's heavy, it stinks like hell, it's hot coming out of the ground. And it's like almost like sometimes like a sludge almost. And that is the worst grade. And then it goes up through lighter grades that are more viscous and sweeter. They don't have as much sulfur in them. Up to the sort of the gold standard, as it were, of oil, which is Brent crude. It is this light, it's thin, it's beautiful coming out, and it's sweet. It doesn't have any sulfur in it. So we go, the crude oil, you see pricing there. That's just an average of all the grades of oil. And then you also see one for the Brent crude. In other words, for the premium crude that's coming out of the ground. And you'll see that the premium obviously is going to be more expensive than the crude. The crude right now, overall, oil is running at about $84 a barrel. The Brent is running at about $91.50 a barrel. And that's normal, that you'll have that, obviously, a better grade of oil will have a higher price than the average price of crude. Now, the price of oil, first of all, before I get to the current political dynamics and all that kind of stuff, speaking from where I was in the business, you really wanted oil, and in putting this in modern times, you'd like to have oil at about $80 a barrel, maybe $78 to $80 a barrel. That way, you're making money going out there into this awful place called the patch or something like that and pulling it out. You're making some money. Oh, but don't you want it to be higher? Not exactly. Because if it gets too high, then every son of a bitch is going to be out there in the field punching wells, trying to find oil with us. And ultimately, they'll find oil, and then it'll all be out there on the market. It'll glut the market, and then the market will drop through the floor. And we're all out of business because we can't pay our leases on our equipment. We can't even pay our payments on our families' homes and all of that. So we don't want that price to get so high that it brings all of these, I shouldn't say it this way, but they're almost like hobbyist wildcatters out there into the field. So it's somewhere drifting around $80. Actually, that's kind of a nice place to be. But then if it gets too high, like I said, that's going to bring speculation on punching wells into the area. Did any of you ever watch the first season of a series called Landman? The first season was so realistic. It was just like it is out there. You're dealing with the oil. You're dealing with all of these bad guys, these cartels trying to use your oil fields for landing strips and stuff like that. But anyway, the big unknown right now is the war in the Middle East. And yes, it is a war. It is at a stalemate right now. Oil is getting through, but we've also gotten to the point where a lot of other ways to get oil out of the Persian Gulf and through this, we've gotten to the point where we don't need the Strait of Hormuz the way we did a while back. We can go to places, we can find other routes to, and also with those high prices we had a few months ago, that brought a lot of speculators out, and they brought oil out of the ground here and there and everywhere. And so the big thing is that all we need to do is get that oil onto these tankers. We call them dirties. There are huge, they're very large dirties. They don't have many ports that they can land at to get to the refineries, but there are a lot of intermediate-sized ports like the Suez port, and then there's one in Panama. I was teaching in Panama. I teach every summer in Central America. There's a port there, and it was very active. So we've got other places now. Go ahead. Because right now there are too many players in it, simply because you've got everything from Oman and Iran with backing from Iran and some from China against the UAE, the Kuwaitis, the Saudis, and then you've got the Houthis doing their thing. You've got a couple of other factional groups doing their thing. It is hot over there. Speaking as a prior service myself, the scuttlebutt is this ain't no game over there now. There is a lot of U.S. bases. We've now counting 15 that have been hit to an extent that in some cases they're non-functional now. Our communication systems are now down because of an attack on the telecommunications nexus in Bahrain. We are in a serious situation. Don't worry, if you get drafted, I will be there to pray for you. Or something like that. And I'll give you some advice. Don't get shot. Okay, that's my best piece of advice. You know, they never tell you about that in recruiting. You know, they tell you about all the cool things you'll get to do, including kill people. They never mention that there are other people who try to do the same thing to you. You know, hey, wait a minute, man. Don't do that. Anyway. Okay, so I'm just giving you an overview. Right now, it's calm, and we really are not in a situation where there is a supply pinch that is significant, especially for the time being. There's oil coming out of the ground. We're even letting Russia put oil into the markets, and they've got places that they can offload at the Caspian seaport and all of that kind of stuff. We've got oil coming out of the ground in a lot of it in the United States. We're producing, we're not self-sufficient. Don't get that idea. We're not self-sufficient. At about 13 million gallons, barrels a day versus what we need, about 18, something like that. However, keep in mind that oil drives an insane amount of the economy. And I'll repeat this over and over. We do need to get off the fossil fuels. But we are nowhere near, no matter what you hear, near the point where we can be off fossil fuels. We've got about 50% of that oil, that crude oil in that barrel or whatever you want to call it, is cracked to gasoline, a very thin, beautiful, smelly substance that makes cars go pfft. Then another 25% goes to distillates. Distillates are things like jet fuel, diesel, kerosene. And then the other 25% or so is plastics, medicines, cosmetics, all concrete, you name it. So this is used even when you see these beautiful wind turbines. It was oil that made those things exist, the materials that make the wind turbine, the concrete piers and the roads and all of that kind of stuff. We are still going to be dependent upon fossil fuels easily for another 30 to 50 years. Like I said, we need to get off them, and we are, but it's not going to happen magically. King oil will be there for a long time, so that's why we keep an eye on it. And what I'm doing is I'm giving you the scope of what we in finance are all about. We're not about calculating numbers and saying, well, the present value of this is... We're out there. We have to know about all of these different worlds, and it's a very cool place to be. In the places I've gone all across the world, one day I would be talking about oil. The next day I might be talking about getting hog bellies on a to one of the not hog bellies. I never did that, but wheat and corn, how we get it from where it is produced to where people desperately need it to be able to stay alive. It's all finance. So that's why I can promote this to you with some degree of interest. Now, over on the middle side are currencies, and I'll get to those near the end of the course. I teach a course in international finance here, so currencies are important, but I'm going to put those off. Over here, there's something here that I want you to look at. We're going to do a lot of this in the class later, but you see this 10-year bond. That one is a treasury bond that has a maturity of 10 years. Its yield, its interest rate, is like a benchmark. We compare interest, we look at that one to see where all interest rates are going. If interest rates go up, that slows down an economy because people aren't going to borrow as much, companies aren't going to borrow to build things. So that is a worry to us. If interest rates are going down, that's better because it fuels the economy, more borrowing and all that. But if it goes down too much, we begin to worry about inflation flaring up. And right now, we are having a problem killing off inflation. You and I both know prices are still going up. So we can't want interest rates to go down until that inflation ember is snuffed out for good. So right now, these bonds, see this yield on this is about 4.65%. That's a high interest rate. That's unusually high. And the Federal Reserve is keeping interest rates up there. Part of it's the Federal Reserve doing it. Part of it's because we're running such massive federal budget deficits. So the government's having to borrow money to drive interest rates up. But that's of concern to us. So over the days that come ahead, we're going to keep an eye on that interest rate because that impacts you directly. Because if the economy is slowing down, that means that there are not as many jobs out there. There are more layoffs. There's less production. There are fewer new products coming to the market that need workers to build them. So those interest rates have an impact on you within the next 18 months or so. What is happening now is going to impact you then because we have to have a forward look at planning. So right now, companies are planning for a year ahead, a year and a half ahead. So that means that what you see now is going to impact you down the road somewhat. Now, I'll show you one more thing here. This is called a sector map. They take the players in different industries, and they look at their like that technology. You would look at the companies in technology, the Google, the NVIDIA, the Microsoft, the Apple. You look at those and you make a portfolio and you say, where did that portfolio go today? Well, it was down a little more than 0.5% today. The technology sector is probably vastly overvalued, but it's not going to collapse. But this was a bear day for technology. The same for financial services. That would be banks, Citibank, Bank of America, and all those banks. And the industrials, they were down too. You know, the hardcore, make the parts that go into the machines, make the machines that go into production facilities for other things. Now, on the other hand, you also see the consumer goods were on the upside very strongly. Look at that. Up to about what is that? About 2.16%. So they were doing good today. It was really good, as a matter of fact. And of course, healthcare, you know, everyone wants to live, so they're going to be okay most day times. Communication, that would be everything from cell phones, mobile phones, to telecommunications networks and all that kind of stuff. And energy, notice that energy was kind of a blah day. It wasn't really, didn't really move a lot. But notice the energy, that thing that is the keeps our the heart of civilization running, it is actually a relatively small sector compared to this behemoth, especially this behemoth of technology right now. But speaking of technologies, and I spent about half of this first lecture going through this. This is your first pass. I won't spend as much time in future lectures, but I will still spend enough time for you to begin to think about these on your own as the leaders of the world that is to come. And if I were to want to say, okay, well, let's do the technology sector. Let's look at a stock in the technology sector. NVDA, that would be NVIDIA. It is, now trading is still going on here, and it is down a little bit, a 0.5%. So this stock is big, but notice how volatile this thing has been. You see that spike in the early morning, and then something spooked the buyer. Do you see how they got spooked here? And there was a heavy sell-off. Everyone was saying, law, buy, buy, buy. Oh, dear, let's sell, sell, sell. And then it just bounced back and forth. And it's almost like the market doesn't know exactly what to do with the information that has been pouring in today. So there you are. Now, let me make a point here that is hugely important. You're going to hear me repeat this in lectures, in math that we do on Excel. The difference between the intrinsic price of a stock and the market price of a stock. That $218.61, that is a market price. That is not the intrinsic price. I'm pretty sure it's not. Here's the thing. You, sir, you're my son. Yeah, you know, shit happens. You know, I was lonely. Okay, I was too drunk to notice. Okay, you are a disappointment to me today. I mean, you come home, and I said, be sure, you know, to bring the car back, and you come in with the steering wheel. This is all that's left of it, Dad. You know, and things have gone bad for a while and all that kind of stuff for you. You know, there were these incidents, and man, you know, I'm today, you know, you are worthless to me. However, I do know you're my kid, and I also know that you're in college, and I also know that you have insane potential. So right now I'm undervaluing, but I know underneath that there is an intrinsic value to you that is good enough that you don't come in the house and I shoot you at your ass, okay? You understand, though, that what I'm trying to do here is I'm recognizing that underneath the pop, 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 the insane sharks that are buying and selling, screaming at each other, throwing those papers at each other, listening to the latest news and ignoring everything else, I know that there is an actual value of that company that is not what is being shown on a trade in the trader's books at any given moment. That's you, the long-term you. The one that when I see you graduate in a few years, oh, that's my baby. Oh God. They're going to say, that's your kid. He's better looking than you are. But anyway, that's what I'm trying to get at here is this idea that underneath, and that's what we are doing in finance. We don't care about the short run. That's for those speculators and those happy boys and girls who hop in, buy and sell and all that. We are the adults in the room. We're the ones who talk about investments that carry through a long period of time. Because a random walk does always revert to its mean. When you're in the woods, if you just start walking, if you're going to make turns and all this kind of stuff, it looks like you're off your path too far to the north or to the south or whatever, somewhere along the way, you always keep passing the straight line that is the intrinsic value. So sometimes the stock is overvalued. Sometimes it's undervalued. We even have, I'm going to show you here in a minute, how you can kind of get a window on whether it is over or undervalued. But rest assured that we are looking at the long run in your personal lives. What do you invest in that carries you and a family, a household, over the years? In a corporation, corporations get in vast scads of money. Where do they put it? Not to make money for tomorrow, but to make money for the enduring presence of that corporation in the future life of the economy. We're talking about longer run hauls here. We need to know what the intrinsic value is and whether or not we should buy now because it's undervalued or if we should not buy now because it's overvalued. Now, in the case of NVIDIA, I'll show you just a few numbers. And I caution you that the textbook gives this from the perspective of a broker. I give it to you from the perspective as us, the buyers and sellers of stocks. The first thing that we want to look at here, will you stop feeling of your leg? That's weird. That's creepy. Look at that flap. You see that? Look at him. Oh, anyway, sorry. I get distracted easily. Okay. Now here's where it really sucks because I can't. Okay, now the bid is 318 and change. 218 and change. That is the price at which you can sell a share of NVIDIA. The ask at 220 is what you can buy a share of NVIDIA at. So in other words, if you decided that you were going to buy a share of NVIDIA, you'd have $220 out of your account. A minute later, you come to your senses and you say, oh no, I sell it. You get 218. And you say, now wait a minute here. What's this about? That's my scratch. I was a broker. I need to make money off the trade. So in other words, if you want to buy from me, you buy at retail, you sell to me, I'll take it from you at wholesale. That's how we make that bid-ask spread is how we make our coin. Now, that bid-ask spread can be very wide or it can be very narrow. This is actually a stock that's over $200. A $2 spread isn't too wide. Generally speaking, the more trades that happen on a stock, the more active the stock is, the tighter the bid-ask spread gets. Because I'm making money on volume of trades. But if there is not a lot of trading, that bid-ask spread tends to spread open up because each transaction I've got to make more money on because there aren't that many transactions happening. So that's one of the big driving forces in the bid-ask spread. Now over here, market cap, you take the number of shares outstanding times the price per share. This is good Lord, is that a five? $5.3 trillion. Let me try you. You, madam, what are you worth? I don't mean what are you worth to your parents. I mean, what are you worth? I can give you a ballpark.
Okay.
$6 million. That's the present value of your future expected cash flow. Is that anywhere close to $5.3 trillion? No, no. In other words, you, me, all of us taken together, everyone in this country, everyone in the world is worth less than one of these gigantic companies. And when I show you these market caps around these giant companies, you will realize that the whole world, the economy, the politics, we're meaningless to it. These companies are so insanely highly valued that we are not even on the radar. We don't even constitute an atom, not even a proton, not even a quark. Well, maybe a quark, they're really dimensionless. So, okay, you understand that we are dealing in a world of giants. We are simply the price takers in that world. We cannot affect it at this level. Money buys everything. If you've heard that money doesn't buy happiness, well, I've heard that too, and I just say, give me a chance. I'll try. Okay, now let me show you this. Beta is a measure of risk. In this case, beta is, a beta of zero means that the security has no risk. A beta of one, the security has the risk of the world portfolio. In other words, its volatility on average is about the volatility of the world's of all the stocks in the world. Anything much above 1.2, you're beginning to talk about risky investments. And in finance, we talk about appropriateness of investments. Generally speaking, unless you are what we technically call a crazy mofo, you should not be investing above betas 1.2 to 1.3. You're asking for it. The greater the risk, the greater the expected return. That is an axiom of finance. However, you get into risk levels up there in the stratosphere, it gets scary. And I'll show you some more high beta. Now, low beta stocks, you shouldn't expect to make as much off, but if you lose, you don't lose as much either. So in other words, when I look at this, that beta is telling me that NVIDIA has the volatility that is about 2.2 times the world's volatility. That's nosebleed territory. That is not a place where even, especially professionals, unless your profession is to take risk like there's no tomorrow. We do not touch these stocks. Corporate America even has rules or policies for investments that prohibit this kind of investment. Normally, if you are planning for the long term, for yourself, for a family, you don't want to be in this world. You don't need this kind of aggravation. It is terrifying because one day you could be up, yay, I'm up, way up. And the next day you could be so poor that you're P-O, because you can't afford the O-R. You're just P-O. Okay, enough of that. Now, price earnings ratio. I'll talk about it technically, but generally speaking, as a rule, about 30 is the fulcrum between undervalued and overvalued. Now, I'll get a little more technical about that later. But if I see a stock that has a P.E. ratio much below 30, that's probably a little undervalued. Might be a buy. It's not a definite buy. You got to look at all these numbers. But it looks like this stock is going to have the price in the price-to-earnings ratio is going to go up to get it back up to maybe about 30. Now, it's actually dependent upon the industry. And you'll hear people say, no, it's not 30, it's 35 or it's 25. I'm just giving you my rule here. And you'll find your own place to be comfortable. But right now, I would say that even though NVIDIA is it's risky AF, it does have some indication that it has some price upward potential here. And then I can look at some other things. This one pays a tiny dividend. Now, a dividend means that you're going to get a check for a little bit of money, even never mind what the price does. So sometimes a dividend can calm down a stock's beta because it's not perfectly certain, but at least you're pretty sure that you're going to get a check in the mail. A little, what's this check? A dollar? A dollar. You own a share of NVIDIA, you paid $200 for it, you get a check for a dollar. So the dividend yield is a dollar divided by 220 or whatever the price is right now. Okay. Let me take you on. Let's look at one more or two more. Let's do one on the other side of the coin. Let's look at Johnson & Johnson. No. Let's look at Colgate-Palmolive, CL. Now, notice that the market is bearish today. Do you see all these reds? It does have, it's not spectacular, but it is a red day. It is a bearish day. And you notice the characteristic? The market was really bullish in the morning. And then it just started spanking stocks. But looking at this one, look at that beta. Colgate-Palmolive, a beta of only 0.22. Super safe, super low risk. There's obvious reasons for that. Do you brush your teeth? Good. Pearly whites, very good, nice teeth. A little plaque, but you know. The thing though is you'd brush your teeth. You probably use toilet paper, right? You shampoo sometimes, don't you? See, those are necessities. This is a company that whether the economy is going up or down, you're still going to brush your darn teeth. You're still going to wash your hair and do all those things that companies like Colgate-Palmolive make products for. So these are essentially what we would call consumer staples. And companies that are doing that, Colgate-Palmolive, there are other ones, Johnson & Johnson and all those kinds of companies, they tend to have low betas simply because they are somewhat more immune to the ups and downs of the economy as a whole. And if I look at this one, look at the price earnings ratio here. Little overvalued, just a little bit. I mean, I don't get really concerned. These are near intrinsic. Both of those were not too far from intrinsic. But, when I look at those, I say to myself, maybe I should hold off on Colgate-Palmolive because that looks a little overvalued for me. And the bid here, if I want to buy a share, I buy at the ask and I pay. What the heck is that? I can't even see these numbers. Don't get so old you can't see because people are going to put you in a home. They should. 91, I can't even read this. 91.21. And if you want to sell a share, you sell it at 91.16, is that? So you see that the ask is above the bid. And this one is a very tight bid. That's a very tight bid-ask spread. So in other words, there's trading volume. I, as a broker, can make my money off a lot of trades. I don't have to spread the bid and the ask to make my coin. And that's a basic explanation. And notice this one pays a pretty nice, that dividend. See that dividend yield? In other words, it pays a check of $2.12. For a buy, you bought it for $90.87, and you're going to get a check for $2.12. So in other words, this is sort of like the yield on a savings account. You know you're going to get at least 2.22% return on it. It gives you an idea of why that. And notice that that's another reason the beta is so low. You're going to get, even if Johnson & Johnson doesn't go up very much, which it probably won't because of that low beta, you're going to get a check in the mail. So that kind of lessens the risk of an investment like this. One last one before I go on to other things. Let's Netflix and chill. That was funny. Damn it. Laugh. What the hell? This is a rough crowd. Okay. Anyway. Okay. We are now past 3:00. You see that number there? The closing bell has already rung. Ding, ding, ding. What you're seeing here is the aftermarket. And you'll see in the mornings before the bell, opening bell, you'll see the pre-market. This is buy and sell orders that are happening after the market has ended. Now the brokers get these orders, they get sell orders, they get buy orders. And if there are more buys and sells in the aftermarket and the pre-market, then the opening bell will see a pop up. If in the aftermarket and the pre-market there are more sell than buy orders, then you'll see when the bell rings, the stock will drop like that. But this is kind of a place where you can lay your bets in if you want in the comfort of the evening after you've had your meal. You can put in your orders and, you know, it just because it piles up in what's called the on the book. And when the bell opens, your trade is executed. And I'll give you a lot of information about the different terminology and the ways that you can execute buys and sells as the time goes on. But notice how Netflix had a roaring day upward. It just shot. And then there was a little bit, see this little bit here? That's probably just profit taking. You know, the price went up, and so some people said, that's enough, I'm going to sell some shares just to collect that big jump. And that can cause a drop-off after a spike like that. Anyway, there's a look at some of the markets. And like I said, I won't spend as much time as in the future as I did today. But some of the lessons learned. First of all, there is an intrinsic price of a stock. That is the long-term value of the company. And then there is a market price, which is different. The market price is driven by pure animal greed. Buying and selling. I got a piece of information, I'm going to act on it. Here's another piece of information, I'm going to act on that. It's only over a long period of time that that activity tends to show an underlying whisper, which is the true value of the company. Now, when does that true value ever happen? It doesn't. It will always be above or below it, but it is always there as the place where the reversion happens. It will cross that intrinsic value to the upside, overvalued. It will cross it to the downside, undervalued. But it's there. And if we, there's this thing that once in a while someone says, well, that's just a theoretical thing. Tell me that a corporation doesn't actually have a true value. If you've been in the markets as I have, you know that no day is everyone's going to say, oh, let's all decide to put it, the price at the true market, at the true intrinsic value. No one's going to say that. We're there to make a buck for the day. Or to, and that ideally anyway. So that's an important thing to keep in mind. But a couple of things. The world, there are three kinds of companies. There are the, let me think how I should put this. Sole proprietorships. And they are by far, by orders of magnitude, the most prevalent kind of company, of business organization. We call them sole proprietorships. The one thing about a sole proprietorship, and I'll talk a little more about these on Monday, it's just one person. And that one person is all at risk. You own a... Let's say, sir, you own a lawn mowing company. Lawn mowing is me, or it's I, or whatever. So all you have is a truck and a lawnmower. You go to rich people's houses and you mow their lawns. One day, you accidentally run over their very, very expensive poodle. You give that animal a show dog trim. Well, they are going to sue you. They're going to take your lawnmower. They are going to take your truck. They are going to take they're going to sell your Bible on Craigslist. They're going to make your parents wear furry costumes. Furries are not a crime, man, okay? You understand that they are going to take everything you own. I most companies are small sole proprietorships, and there is no company there. It's just you. You can give it a fictitious name if you want. You can actually apply for it. And when I was first in the business of art and photography, I would go to these shows. There was one show, and it happened more than once. I had a show, I had my exhibition booth, I had these very large images, paintings, and photographs on these easels so people walking by could see them. Some kid runs through, kicks one of the legs of the easel, the thing comes to the ground, shatters. This museum glass was all over the place and they would ruin the picture. And the woman, his mother comes up and she's screaming at me, "I'm going to sue you. You almost killed my little boy. He's got cuts." And you know, I had to be as careful and calm as I could. I said, "Look, bitch, you know." But the point was, I was all at risk in that situation. Now, a partnership isn't any better. You're jointly and severally all at risk. When one partner dies, the whole thing dies. They are the same in terms of this risk. It's all on you. But then comes the corporation. The corporation is a living entity. It is separate from its owners. You are a stockholder, you're the owner, but the liabilities of a corporation do not seep through to you. This is how some of these famous businessmen and women have made their fortunes, because they will just simply run up the bills in a corporation they create, pay themselves an insanely huge salary, and then they just let the company drill into the ground. And all that happens is the debt holders and the shareholders have lost everything. And then they go on, dust themselves off, and do it again and again. And somehow they come out looking like geniuses. I know one in particular. I never met him, but he was well known in the New York real estate field who did that all the time. So the corporation, though, understand something about corporations. It's an entity of its own. You as the owners get the residual cash flows. The first to have to be rewarded are the debt holders. A corporation must satisfy its debts in a timely manner before the shareholders have any claim at all. So we say the debt holders have the prior claim and the shareholders, have the residual claim. But we're free. That's what was so magnificent about the invention of the corporation. I am now a corporation. I can take risks that I could never take before, because the worst that can happen is that someone hits my corporation. They can't touch me, because it was the corporation that did it, not the owner. I'm tired of this. Go home.